We continue our festive celebration of Christmas, third day in the octave of Christmas. And this third day is set aside as a celebration of the Word entrusted to us through Saint John, John the Apostle and the Evangelist. So it's a great day to rejoice in the Word, because John is one of the apostles of the Word. It's hard to even know where to start when it comes to John the Apostle, because he's a real giant. Maybe we could start with these figures behind me. John is this figure, just standing to the left of the cross. Blessed Mother on the right, and the rest of the people there, the Anuim. When Father Francis drew the design of this, he clearly put John and Mary there. That was intention. The rest of them were just Anuim, anonymous Anuim, but the one who turned it from a pen and pencil drawing into a sculpture put that figure behind Mary in the red, that Mary Magdalene. Now, we know from John's Gospel that there were other people there. There was Mary, wife of Clopas, was there, Mary Magdalene, and some other women. So that's the gathering of the Anuim. In fact, you're there. I'm this one. You're that one. You're that one. You're that one. You could find yourself in that group of the Anuim at the foot of the cross. And we can thank John the Apostle for this depiction of people gathered at the foot of the cross, including Mary and John. It's an interesting thing, because none of the other apostles were there, or evangelists were there. John was the only one. And he wouldn't dare place himself there if he wasn't really there. And he's the only one who speaks about Mary being there. So it's quite a precious gift of the scriptures, which Father Francis turned into a devotional or a meditation artwork. Of course, they weren't standing like that. I mean, that reminds me of the famous painting of the apostles at the Last Supper. They're all sitting on one side of the table. Of course, they didn't sit like that at the Last Supper. And of course, they're not standing like this. They wouldn't have stood as if they're facing the audience or something. They would have been facing Jesus. And they would have been almost certainly standing next to each other. Whether it would have looked like John was supporting Mary standing at the cross, or Mary was supporting John, I don't know. They were supporting each other. But that's one way to start. John was there at the foot of the cross. He received the whole gift that was given from the cross. He's the only one who reports the flow of blood and water that came forth from the pierced side of Jesus on the cross. And he's the only one whom we know was at the Last Supper leaning on the heart of Jesus, leaning on the breast of Jesus. Everyone else was listening to Jesus' words. Well, maybe not Judas, but people could hear his words, see his gestures, but John is the one who listened to Jesus' heart and saw that heart pierced. So that's the one we're talking about, John the Apostle. One month ago, we celebrated St. Andrew the Apostle. And we noted that Andrew is always outside that inner circle of the big three. He's always number four. And he comes at the end of the year sometimes. He comes at the beginning of the year sometimes. He's a kind of a supportive figure, a flexible figure. But John is one of the big three, Peter, James, and John. And his feast day always comes in the octave of Christmas. He's a Christmas apostle. Again, an interesting thing, because his gospel doesn't recount the story of Jesus' birth in Bethlehem. We learn that from Matthew and Luke. But John is the one who makes it very clear that this baby born in Bethlehem was not beginning his journey in Bethlehem. He was at the beginning. In the beginning was the Word. It's John who identifies that little child as the Word, the eternal Word. John who says in today's first reading, this word we have heard, we have seen with our eyes, we have looked upon, we have touched with our own hands. St. Augustine says, how can you touch a word? He says, we wouldn't be able to touch the word unless the word became flesh and dwelt among us. So this is it, the incarnate word, the word who became flesh, who took on human nature. John is the one who describes that most, with the most penetrating insight. So John, the apostle, son of Zebedee, younger brother of James, the youngest of the apostles, the apostle who lived the longest, the apostle who, in fact, he lived so long and there were attempts on his life, but he didn't die. A kind of rumor started to spread that he wasn't going to die. And it's mentioned in his gospel. People thought that Jesus said he wasn't going to die. And he explains, no, it doesn't mean he's not going to die. Jesus said, suppose I want him to wait until I come. Just suppose. So he lived a long life. And that might explain part of why he had such profound insights. He had more time to ponder the mysteries. Also, he's the one who took Mary into his home. So he had the expert guide in pondering. Today's a great day to pick up the gospel, or any of the writings of John. Gospel, three epistles, the book of Revelation, all written by John. Pick up any one of them, and you'll find, gosh, on any page, on any verse, profound revelation. Profound, sometimes puzzling in its profundity, in its mystical imagery. There's only the New Testament. The Old Testament has lots of authors, you know, but the New Testament doesn't have that many authors. And the big ones, the ones who wrote almost the whole New Testament, are Luke, Paul, and John. And Luke wrote a gospel and Acts, two long books. Paul wrote all those letters, and then John wrote the ones I just read. So that's most of the New Testament. But of all the writers, John is the one who you would think would be the least prepared. Luke, well, he was an educated man. Paul was an educated man, very well educated. I don't know about Mark's education, but you know, Mark's gospel, he was just in a hurry to write down get the facts, get it out there. Matthew had a very structured way of presenting it. Well, he was a tax collector and he had an orderly mind. Luke was a very an educated Greek writer. He followed the high Greek style. And then there's John, he's a fisherman. He's a fisherman from Galilee. Where did he get this? Some of the scholars can't believe that he actually wrote these things. They, you know, scholars love to be skeptical and try to figure out things that are not worth asking. But anyway, the depth of John's writings is so great that they think no ordinary fisherman could have done this. And in a sense, it's true. He's not an ordinary fisherman. He's a chosen fisherman. He's a fisherman who was schooled by Jesus himself, and a fisherman who was inspired by the Holy Spirit. So that explains where he gets his depth. Maybe he had an advantage not being educated, because people who are educated tend to get categories and style and structure, and that's a good thing because it makes it possible. But John had a more childlike spirit, a free spirit. And so when he wrote things, he just launched past any kind of standard forms. He launched into a level of mysticism. In the early church, sometimes people weren't even sure what to do with it. It was so different. His writings are so different. I have a book, I think I've shared this before. It's a book I inherited from Father Francis. It parallels all four Gospels. So, and each page there's four columns. And then the parallel versions of the Gospel passages are set up. So the first three columns, Matthew, Mark, Luke. And there's a lot of similarity. And then John has a column all his own. Usually when there's something from Matthew, Mark, Luke, there's just a blank space for John. And then often when there's a passage from John, blank space, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. It's so different. So you think of the conversation with Nicodemus. You think of the meeting of Jesus with the woman at the well, and the healing of the man born blind, the raising of Lazarus, and then that long discourse of Jesus at the Last Supper. That's unique to John. In today's readings, what I mentioned, the first reading comes from his first letter, where John expresses what he personally experienced, heard it, saw it, even touched it. And he says, this is the word of life, and this is what we proclaim to you. This is what we are bearing witness to. This is what we are testifying to. This is what we want you to know. We want you to know this word. In the gospel, it takes us to the tomb of Jesus on Easter morning. So John, the Christmas apostle, John who understood most deeply the incarnation, the birth of the Word, he also gives us deep insight into the death of the Word and the resurrection of the Word. So here we go, in just a few days after Christmas, we're already at the tomb. Peter and John, the beloved disciple, they run to the tomb. John gets there first. It's symbolic of the leap of the mystics. The mystics often penetrate into mysteries before the theologians and the bishops and the popes figure out what they're talking about. They get there first, but the mystics still have to submit to the church. So John gets there first, but he waits until Peter arrives. That's symbolic. Now I'm reading it symbolically, and John encourages us to read everything symbolically. He submits himself to the authority of Peter, the authority of the Pope, authority of the church. Peter goes in, makes his evaluation. Nobody here, it's just some cloths. That opens the door for John the mystic to enter in, and it says, he saw and believed. He saw the same thing as Peter, but he believed more than Peter. It's a great gift to us. I'm just trying to spark your interest in John and in the Word of God, which comes to us through John. Let me just take one last leap here. Let's go to the book of Revelation. If you look at the book of Revelation, you'll find lots of unusual things. Apocalyptic writing. It's an example of that freedom that John has to use imagery and to use multi-leveled images that have multiple levels of meaning, so that we don't ever think we have exhausted what we have been given in the living Word. It's John who schools us in the way of pondering symbolic language, symbolic figures. He's not a literalist. He's not trying to explain like a historian or like a newspaper journalist, this is what happened, and this is what happened, and this is what happened. He's conveying the meaning of what happened. And the meaning is, well, it's beyond our comprehension, so we can keep digging into it, keep exploring it. Okay, so go to John's Gospel, go to the book of Revelation, go to the writings of the letters of John, and celebrate the great gift of the Word. It's like a banquet. It's like a huge a feast with a huge array of different foods, some of which you don't even recognize. But they're all healthy and they're all delicious, and they're all available to us in abundance through John. So we thank God for this feast day of John, apostle and evangelist, and we ask him to teach us what he himself learned at the foot of the cross, at the heart of Jesus, at the side of Mary. We ask him to school us in the way of Jesus Christ.